Computers have so many functions for school, for work, for entertainment, and you know, the list just goes on. And I think we owe it to ourselves to learn how to use our computers in the most efficient way. And today we're going to talk with you about how to get a second monitor to help you in a number of situations, plus get your computer-related questions answered as well with Peter Green. Pete, an independent computer consultant, provides great information and resources at Infostar.com. And Peter, always great to have you with us.
Always great to be back, Larry.
You know, research has shown that dual monitors can increase productivity. And, you know, I don't have two monitors. I have some screens that are dual screens, so I have two different things going on the screens. But
right.
Jennifer Dargan, one of my many bosses, I'm in her office sometimes, and she's got two screens going, and it seems to be pretty handy.
Well, you know, it's been going on for many years. And I remember going to a Windows Comdex show and Microsoft showing it off at their booth and talking about it, you know, in a presentation. And I had actually invested, trying to remember, it was an ATI tuner, TV tuner card. And I remember having it set up. So I had a TV tuner within my computer screen. So I was streaming cable TV through the computer. And, you know, so all these things have been around for a long time. And I've set them up for many people over the years. Probably the most notorious one would be for a stockbroker, where he was doing trades. And he insisted that he had to have two screens on his desktop and none of the other brokers in his office. And I know they're still in business today, so obviously, you know, that paid great dividends for him. But in setting it up for people and watching the transformation in terms of what they're able to do for work.
Yeah.
But the point I bring it through today is because there are so many new computers out there that actually have it built in that you just have to buy the extra monitor. So the extra monitor cost has come down dramatically. You know, if you're paying attention to TV prices, the flat screens also double as computer screens because the gamers out there salivate when they could be hooking. It's not so much an Xbox or a PlayStation, but you can also hook up your computer. And if you're a computer gamer, you know, to these large screen TVs because they have all the hookups for them. Well, the new computers, and I'm not saying the laptops, I'm talking about desktop systems, typically have an extra interface. And all you have to do is have an extra monitor to plug into that interface, and you've got two screens. So what kind of things can you do with
the
two screens?
What's the benefit?
If you're researching something, you can have it so that on one screen is you know, a browser, and you could have your email open on the other screen. Or if you're doing accounting and someone calls in and you're looking up information, you could be online, but you could also be in your accounting system.
Yeah.
So if you need to cut and paste, you can have your application you're pasting to and the application you're cutting from on the other screen. So you're going back and forth.
Much
versus
quicker.
On a one-screen system, you're having to either resize those screens for the applications to a fraction of what you're seeing on one screen versus it being full on the other screen. So it's a great time saver. And
Jennifer was saying it can save up to 30, make you about 30% more efficient.
I don't want to attach numbers to it, but all I could say is the people that have them that I've experienced over the years, and this is like 15 years, it's like if you take it away from them,
they don't like it.
you better not be the person around when you take it because you might get hurt.
Oh, man. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. Join in with your own questions. I haven't given the number, so let me do that right now. 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, Facebook page title of the Larry Mueller Show. So we would definitely love to hear from you. So not all computers are capable of adding an extra monitor.
Well, if, like I said, a lot of the ones that are sold today have those dual ports on the back. There's the old 15-pin VGA, and then there's this newer type interface. You know, typically with what comes with your computer, there's instructions as to what the ports are for. But if you don't have an extra port, you can add an inexpensive video card to power up that second monitor. So cost-wise, that second monitor, depending upon the size, from, let's say, a 20-inch to a 24-inch, I've seen prices anywhere from like $90 to $120, $140 for that second monitor.
Yeah, it's a pretty cheap. We had a Facebook comment from Jerry who said, I've run dual monitors for several years. My current system has dual video cards, and I am now running three 29-inch monitors on my desk. There's no such thing as too much desktop space.
Right. That's great.
Oh, I love that. So yeah. He's doing three.
Yeah.
Well, why not?
That's right. If you can find a reason to justify it, you know. All I could say is once people have tried it, they get hooked. They've never gone the other way.
And in terms of choosing a monitor, I mean, is there...
Typically do is look for feedback reviews from what people, you know, when you see them on sale, like tiger.com, buy.com, newegg.com, going to Amazon and just, you know, reading user feedback. There's a variety of manufacturers. There are also OEMs that do it, original equipment manufacturers that make it for other companies out there. And a lot of people are pretty good with doing reviews of monitors and what they're using and what they like and dislike.
We have some callers online. And again, is it much work to...
If your system has already got it, you plug it in and you reboot the system and it'll recognize it if it's capable.
Just that quick.
That quick. And then there are some settings you can do in the operating system to fine-tune it. And you can also go online. There are a lot of instructions about things that you can do. And what's kind of cool is with the backgrounds, the desktops and stuff, you can, with Windows, you can download a variety of themes. So some of the pictures are awesome. So with these high resolution backdrops or wallpapers, you've got some phenomenal pictures, and you can have panoramic ones that go across both of them.
Oh.
Or you can have independent.
Or like Jerry, across three of them?
Or across three of them.
That is...
And those are free. Those are download. You can download them for free. You don't have to pay for them.
Well, that is very, very cool. Very, very cool. Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, visits with us regularly to help you with your personal computer problems. And again, if you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Taking a look at your computer and your software today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Great to have him with us. And great to have you listening in. Questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Maureen in Baraboo has a question, so let's go to her. Maureen, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I have a MacBook Pro, if I put it to sleep and then open it up a couple hours later, sometimes these bright, colorful lines are flashing, and it's like a TV that's on the blitz, lasts for a few seconds and then sort of settles down. I'm just wondering if this indicates that there might be a serious problem that I should take it in for.
Something like that I usually keep a watch out for if it becomes more persistent and, prolonged and eventually, almost like a permanent effect. That's usually means some kind of hardware failure. It sounds like it's happening right after you start up, and once things kind of get a little bit warmed and on track, then it works fine. So I just keep my eye on it. And
if it starts lengthening out, you're saying, then
yeah,
maybe...
Or if it starts changing its personality even more. You know, different colors start flashing or pixels start disappearing. What's interesting is related to pixels disappearing is the manufacturers actually allow for a I don't know the exact number, but a very small number of pixel failure where they're saying that's acceptable.
Huh.
So, you know, when it gets to a point where it's really annoying, then obviously it's not acceptable to you. But every manufacturer has some kind of like acceptance level with that.
There we go. Thanks, Maureen. Good luck. Appreciate your call.
You know, something that I just want to interject is I noticed someone had flashed a question up on one of the screens here is related to do you need another mouse for that second monitor? And the answer is no, and that would probably be confusing to you as the user trying to figure out which pointer, you know, you're using. So actually use one mouse on the system and it just you're dragging it across screens.
It is the coolest look.
Yeah.
When the first time you see that, I thought, oh, is that ever cool?
You know, and as far as how you get, you know, your applications over to the other screen, part of it's set up. And part of it is you just hold the mouse, left mouse button down on it and drag it across and then just drop it there in
there
place.
You go. John in La Crosse, thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, gentlemen. Yeah, as alluded to before, I had talked about someone who trades stocks, and I do the same. I actually have six monitors set up.
Awesome.
And you were just talking about the mouse deal. That took a little bit for me to kind of figure out on my own. As you mentioned, there's some programming you can go in that Windows is really pretty easy to figure out the multi-monitor system, how you want that set up, you know, if it's left to right. For example, I actually have two rows of three, and, yeah, you can move your mouse, you know, in a circle as far as the screens go, up,
that's
down,
cool.
Left, right. And then, kind of also holding the, left click, and you can go diagonally and a whole bunch of neat applications there. So
if you were to put a value on it, would you say it's invaluable how you're using your system with all those monitors?
Well, for what I do, absolutely. I need to have, you know, I need to have Twitter up. I need to have several real-time applications up for what I do. And just from doing that and the convenience of it, I have another desktop where I added a second monitor just because, as you alluded to before, the two different applications in many instances that you want to do. So I'm getting something like a cut and paste you mentioned. I'll highlight something on the line and then go paste that on a Word document. So, yeah, I'll never be going back.
So what size monitors are they?
Yeah, I have six 25-inch monitors and this is maybe a tip out there for folks. If they're going to get a new system anytime soon with multi-monitors, desktop, the more monitors you have, you know, bargain with that company. I have HP, and I was able to talk them down probably about $220 total for the cost of six monitors. So
wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
That is great. John, thank you so much.
Sure.
Six monitors.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's the record. Or if there's
somebody
out there with more.
Well, you know, part of it is dependent upon how many cards you can actually put in a system. And, you know, when you start getting to six, you have to, you know, look at the hardware, the board, and what it supports. So it starts getting a little dicey when you increase that number. But there are boards out there that support multiple card numbers.
Oh, that's how I can certainly see it for somebody like him. I mean, you're day-to-day, minute-by-minute decisions going on.
Access to information.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a question from somebody else here. I just lost it. I had it up, and then I lost it. Here we go. A comment from Mallory. I work for a top insurance company as a nurse. And we have dual monitors within our office. It's outstanding. Able to read documents while typing on another screen. Oh, that's another good use for it. I honestly could use another monitor at times. I love my multiple screens so much that I plan to move back to the desktop computer at home for personal use just so I can have multiple monitors.
Now, her office is probably going to go to six monitors per system after...
fact that you can have, you know, if you're going to if you need to sort of type or edit a piece, to have the piece that you're going to edit up on one side and then just be able to type on the other monitor, I could see that would be.
You know, it's also nice is, you know, for people that are doing web pages, you know, you have the information you're editing in your editor or your HTML, you know, program you're using. You can have one for your if you use it for FTPing or if you use another program for FTPing, and then you have your browser open in another screen. So after you've posted it, then you do a refresh so you can see the work you actually put up.
We have Tom in Sussex up next with a question. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about I have installed Windows 10 about a month and a half ago or so. Mm-hmm. And I'm having problems. I think I'm having several issues with 10 because I never had all of these problems before, and I used to use Windows 7. Is that right, 7?
Yep.
Yeah.
7, 8.
Well, there's 7 and 8 and now 10.
Yeah.
Skip 9.
No, I had 7 prior to this.
Okay.
And so then what happened is I go and I have two users on the computer. I have my wife and myself, and we both have separate profiles. In other words, we have two usernames.
Right.
Yep.
And then so then what I do is I put it to sleep, and then when I come back in, it tells me that I don't have, or my level is low. The pop-up shows me a very little signal for the web, and it says Sussex is low. So now I don't understand, and I used to work just fine before this.
So are you connecting by Wi-Fi?
Yes.
Yeah. It sounds like it's having an issue with the Wi-Fi connection. Not really sure why.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that I use Kaspersky, and a couple times it's come up and said that there's a vulnerability in public Wi-Fis, but that wasn't it. And it says, with Wi-Fi networks, that's what I saw for the problems.
Now, here's an interesting point as related to upgrading to Windows 10 is Windows 10 is the operating system upgrade. The other programs that you're using are not upgraded to Windows 10.
Okay.
So what you may want to do is make sure that you've done upgrades to those programs because there may be issues running them in Windows 10.
Right. I have auto upgrades, and so it does put it in there all the time. And
okay.
I do see them come up here and there, and I look at them, and I...
The other good thing to do is make sure that you have multiple web browsers downloaded, so not just Microsoft's Windows 10 browsers called Edge.
Edge, yes.
Yeah, it used to be Internet Explorer, but, you know, they don't want to say it's one and the same, but, you know, hey, it's a browser from the same company, so I'm sure they borrowed some technology from the prior Internet Explorers to download something like Mozilla, Firefox, Google Chrome, Apple Safari, so that you have the ability to look at web pages with another browser to see if there, you know, if the issues follow the web page or, you know, if it's browser independent. But as far as the Wi-Fi, you might want to do a search on Windows 10 and Wi-Fi connection problems and see if there's, you know...
Anything pops up.
Something pops up out there.
Right.
With such a large operating system, you know, push, Windows 10 and them offering it as a free upgrade or update, there are a lot of people who have taken advantage of it. But at the same time, there's so many permutations of systems out there that they don't... You know, it's impossible for them to figure out everything they're going to be confronted with. So then there might be patches out there. They're telling you that you need to, that Windows 10 is going to maintain it and update it over time, that you don't really have a choice. But at the same time, that doesn't mean it's going to be without problems. Because, again, they have to identify those problems and offer fixes for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. We have open lines. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Great to have him along. And again, you can join in, 800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post your Facebook question there. We did have a comment from Adrian on Facebook. For the gent with the Win 10 Wi-Fi issue, Adrian says, in the settings on Win 10, there's a checkbox allowing the system to turn off Wi-Fi to save power when asleep.
Yeah, that'll definitely have an effect.
On waking, some computers do not restart the Wi-Fi. My wife was having this issue, but that simple checkbox cured it.
Awesome.
So that's awesome. Thanks so much for that help, Adrian. Appreciate it. John in Fond du Lac has a question. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Good morning.
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 Yes, I have a question. I have an older iMac, probably it's like a late 2007, mid-2008, and I'm a couple of updates behind on the latest Apple software operating system. And I'm just wondering whether it's worth upgrading an older computer like that. I know it doesn't cost anything for the download, but probably more memory. And do you have an idea of how much memory is needed to upgrade that Apple operating system?
Well, I can tell you, I have a Mac Pro, and it's reached its life cycle in terms of being able to be updated, because Apple won't update it. So there may be, a limit to what you can actually update your system to. In other words, Apple's picking and choosing, you have like maybe 6 years, to apply an update to your operating system, and then in year seven, we don't want to support that hardware anymore. You may be at that point in time where you can't actually go to the latest version of their OS.
Okay. All right.
So you can't really throw any more memory or anything to it.
Change the RAM. You can add more RAM.
But my point is they may not actually, even though you add more memory to your system, that may not be enough to allow you to qualify for the update.
Do you know how much is required for that latest operating system?
I believe the standard that they're shipping systems with is 4, realistically 8 gigs of memory.
Okay.
But it's also based on the CPU that's in the system as well.
Right, I understand. There's a limit to how much you can upgrade.
Right.
I think mine is 4 or possibly 6. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
So, okay.
All right.
Apple's got the specifications on their, if you go to look at, I believe there's some version of Yosemite that's the latest one.
Right.
I don't know the exact number, but, they have the specifications of what they require. I do know that, I tried to do that on the Mac Pro, and it basically said, this is it.
You're out of luck.
This is it.
You're out of luck. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll check the system. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for calling.
I know it can be frustrating because you still have capable hardware. I mean, the Mac Pro that I have has got 9 gigs of memory. It's got a Xeon processor. It still works great for what I use it for. Yeah, I could update it and it would work better on some of the software I'm using, but I don't really need to. But as far as getting the most current operating system on it, they're saying, no, it ain't going to happen. And so I live with that.
You can join in, too. Oh, we just lost a caller. You can join in. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Got a question from Nancy in Plainfield, who called in but couldn't hang on. Wondered, do I need to be worried about my personal information being stolen when disposing of a printer? I have printed tax forms with my information on them that I wouldn't want to get into the wrong hands. So with the printer, is there memory there that
The printer has, there are printers that have memory, but the memory is basically wiped clean every time it's restarted. There used to be you could, you would download a signature into a laser printer's memory, or you could have like a piece of hardware that would plug into a laser printer and would have the signature or logos embedded in those things. Those things would have to be destroyed. But the printer and the memory is basically like an eraser board, and every time it gets restarted, it gets cleaned out. So unless you left your USB thumb drive in the printer that had personal information when you disposed of it, I would be concerned with the USB drive containing information, but not with the printer itself.
Somebody else wondered about desktops. Why do we have to have a desktop computer in order to have the two screens?
It's really the feature of the hardware being the desktop versus like a laptop or a tablet or any other device. You have to have the ability to interface to those two screens. And you can have a desktop or a laptop with two monitors, but it's typically that second monitor, and I haven't tried it this way, so I'm not ruling this out, but typically the way the laptop interfaces with that external monitor is to simply show the same thing that's on your desktop and not the ability to have a second desktop.
Yeah.
Because that second monitor is a second desktop. It's not like a duplicate. In the case of how you use it here in the studio, you're duplicating the desktop so that on the other side you can see the same thing that I'm seeing, what Larry's seeing. And that would be the case with like a laptop. But in the case with a desktop, you're actually having two separate occurrences so that you can have two separate applications going on.
Yeah, just to describe our studio here, I have three computer screens that I look at. And on two of those screens, I have two different sets of information. Mm-hmm. So I have five sets of information on three screens.
Let's not confuse people, Larry. There's a lot going on. There's a lot here. But, you know, to compare desktop and having, hardware desktop PC with the ability to interface to two monitors would be different than a laptop where you plug in an external monitor. Some people use that to train, so when you flip it around and you have other people looking at what you're doing on your laptop, they're seeing what you're working on versus having two separate applications going on at the same time that are entirely different.
Email from Carrie in regards to an earlier caller with the flashing lines across the screen. Carrie says, tell their caller to try upgrading their OS to Yosemite, which is a free upgrade. Mm-hmm. My mom's MacBook had the same screen issue, and the upgrade seemed to fix it. So
sometimes that works. It's worth trying, especially if someone else said, you know, it helped them.
Yeah, why not? Why not give it
a
try?
And again, then it becomes, is the system capable of being updated to Yosemite? You don't know until you actually try.
Yeah, okay, there we go. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sometimes technology gets a bad rap, like so many things. When it's working well, you don't really take note, but when it isn't, you certainly notice it then. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us as we visit with Peter Green, independent computer consultant. Always happy to have him stop by. And Peter, when usually at this time of our program, when you're with me, we have a top 10 list. And what have you got for us today?
Well, hockey season is upon us, and there used to be a site called capgeek.com, and the individual passed away of cancer earlier this year. And he didn't move it on to somebody else, but there are other sites that have taken its place, and it's just interesting how pro sports is dealing with salary caps. So this one is called hockeyscap.com, and there are all these top 10 in the archives are up at infostar.com. And on the left side, you click on the top 10 archives or the current. Number two is called choosemyplate.gov, and it's all about nutrition, and it's a government resource that's up there, and it's very useful. Number three is the UW has a press release for Badger football games starting this year. They're using this service called Yinz Camp, YINZCAM.com. And talking about streaming technology, this is why our bandwidth for internet access for smartphones and so forth has got to get bigger and bigger and faster. Number four is called Zergnet, ZERGNET.com, and it's just got a lot of stories about movies, gaming, entertainment, and sports and so forth. Very visual interface. You need to check it out. Number five, a lot of people in Madison for apartment living. Well, there's a site called ApartmentTherapy.com, and it's a useful, searchable resource for those that are using the apartment lifestyle. Number six is website you won't hear mentioned too often, but for people that want to share URLs, uniform resource locators, which are web pages, and they have these long addresses, you can shorten them up. You can go to this resource, and I put a link into an article about others, but it's called Goo, GOO.GL, and it's a resource posted by Google for making it easier to share those web links. Number seven, for people into stocks, there's a website called earningswhispers.com, and it's just to help you kind of have your ear to the pavement for the stock market. Number eight is called leanin.org, and it's a very useful resource. It supports the book and is focused on encouraging women to pursue their ambitions. Number nine is downforeveryone or justme.com, and it's for just... You know, is the website up or down? Is it you or is it everybody else that's having a problem? It's a resource to help you check that out. And number 10 is called smartnetbuilder.com, and it's a useful resource for helping you setting up and maintaining your own personal network.
And all those are on infostar.com's site, as always.
Current or the top 10 archives in today's date.
Drew and Gilman has a question, so let's go there. Drew, thanks a lot for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a question about internet.
Okay.
We live in a very rural area, Gilman, Wisconsin, and we have been struggling with really slow internet for quite some time. And we were thinking about upgrading to satellite internet, so I was wondering if your caller today has what he thought would be the best satellite internet, or what you know.
Well, satellite internet connectivity has been out there for a long time. I don't know if you have options for, you know, competing satellite internet service in your area, but there are some things that you need to pay attention to. Number one is the line of sight, you know, where your dish is going to be pointing to in the sky. It needs to be clear and unobstructed, just like it would be for someone getting satellite TV. So that's important. Another alternative, and I'm not sure if this is, again, available in your area, but it has become more so in rural Wisconsin and other places in the country, is looking at a cell phone service provider with them providing an internet hotspot. So, for example, the company I work for, we purchased an internet hotspot that you can take with you, travel around the country, and allows you to hook up to five devices, in some cases more than five devices, to power, provide internet power to laptops and tablets and cell phones. So those are really your two options to look into. And you know, for example, in the Beaver Dam area, there are what they call cell phone providers, but how good is their cell phone service?
Yeah.
And it is my understanding in that region, the best one is U.S. Cellular, but there are other providers in that area. So, you know, you have to question, okay, they're going to offer me, you know, internet hotspot, but how good is it going to work? and you really need to just experience and try it to see if it will actually work for you. And another tip is to have an application called speedtest.net on a smartphone or on a laptop that you're hooked up with, or a desktop or whatever system, so you can actually test the trueness of that internet connection. In other words, you know, where I work, they say we're buying Charter at 80 megs for download. Well, am I really getting that? And in fact, we do, and I test it, and I can see that we're getting at least that, and sometimes maybe a little bit more. So if they say they're delivering a speed of 5 meg or 10 meg, whatever that is, use those applications like speedtest.net to actually test and see the trueness of your connectivity.
There you go. And thanks a lot, Drew, for calling. Appreciate your call.
Here's one more thing, and I'm not saying this is for everyone, but sometimes you might have a business that's fairly close by, maybe across the street, you know, a bar, tavern, restaurant down the street, and sometimes they're bringing in the internet service, and maybe you're friends, or you can become friends with them and talk about, you know, the ability to tap into that. And there are ways to do that, where you can have antennas pointing to each other and sharing that internet speed. I'm not saying it's for everyone, but it is a possible alternative, or neighbors where you're close enough and the line of sight is good, so you can actually share the internet connection between two locations.
There we go. Thanks a lot, Drew, again for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, 800-642-1234. We have some comments on email and Facebook as well. From Kathy on Facebook, any ideas for a self-help resource? I only know how to do internet and email.
Self-help resource. You know, in terms of learning other things, you know, YouTube is a great site for looking at tutorials and learning ways to do things, you know, and virtually anything you can think of. There are some other tutorial websites, lynda.com. You can
That's a check, really good one.
Yeah, you can check that out for free. I know there are a lot of university and tech college courses that use that with their students. You know, in some cases, you sign up for a class at a tech college, and you have access to that as a resource for the semester, you know, for a pretty inexpensive amount. I mean, though, your library is a great resource. They have a lot of books, a lot of videos, internet access as well. I mean, I would those are areas
those
where
are
I'd start.
Those are pretty good ones. Mary commented, there's a feature that allows you to set duplicate monitor versus Extend. Works great to have an external monitor with a laptop and then have two different screens filled with info for...
You know, I've never used a laptop that way. I've always used it as the teaching way. And that's just a great insight into, you know, that you can extend it on your laptop as well.
Yeah, and she says, for example, WPR on your laptop and your work on the extended monitor.
Yep.
Kind of like that idea for sure. We have some more comments, too, that I want to get to. A comment from Spencer. You can use a second monitor on a laptop the same way you can use you can on a desktop, as long as the laptop has an HDMI or VGA output. To extend the desktop to the second monitor instead of mirroring it, you must right-click the desktop and click Properties.
Yeah, the key there is the HDMI, because you need that second interface to the monitor. So the HDMI is a technology that's more recent than the original VGA. So you need that both not only in the laptop hookup, but also the monitor hookup as well.
And then under you go to Properties, then under Display Settings, there's a drop-down box that allows you to select Extend this monitor, and that takes care of it. And then,
you know, someone had put in a question before about Windows updates, and it's an interesting dynamics that people need to understand. With Windows 7, Windows 8, you could choose to change your update settings. In other words, you could say, I want to be notified of Windows updates for the operating system and allow them to be applied automatically, or you could or set it up so that you didn't have to be notified and never update your system, or you could be notified, but you would choose whether or not to update it on your own time.
Right.
With Windows 10, their policy is basically if you choose to have Windows 10, you will update your operating system. We will do it for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something to pay attention to, because what my argument has always been is you should be in control of when you apply those updates, whether or not they're something you want to do or have to do. But I have in the past seen problems where you apply a Windows update and it has actually caused a problem with the system. And I talked about that years ago where my son had Windows Vista on his system and the update made it just constantly go in a loop, reboot. And, you know, how do you get out of that? So obviously there was a problem with applying that update. I'm not Microsoft, so I can't say that, you know, the updates that they're applying are going to be perfect every time. And that's my concern. But they're basically saying if you go to Windows 10, you need to be prepared to accept the updates that they push your way.
Nancy is at the Tomo Police Department and are getting an enormous amount of spam email. We have a Mac Mini and CenturyLink as a server. Have the spam setting set high on CenturyLink, but not sure how to do it on a Mac or how to block unwanted email.
Well, depending upon what you're using for the software for the Mac, you can set up rules. So, you know, it's more dependent upon the software client that you're using on any computer to set up rules to redirect it to your spam or your junk, in, you know, mailbox on your email system.
So where do you go to do that?
If it's in Outlook, for example, there are tutorials out there for setting up the rules.
Okay.
So you can just redirect it to where, you know, when it comes in, it's not going to your inbox, it's going to spam or junk mail.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking computers, excuse me, computers with him.